in-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
What's left of us?
Today is Friday, April 20th. I'm Nina Kurgia.
And I'm Iqbal Ahmed. You're listening to a special 420 episode of News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia, to our campus, to the residents of Vancouver, to listeners of our newscasts and podcasts on our website, citr.ca, and our good friends down at the Art Gallery.
Good evening. It is 5:05 and time for another full hour of independent news. Today, we bring you a full hour of coverage of the 420 National Day of Marijuana protests happening in downtown Vancouver. We feel it is our sole duty living in Vancouver to speak of this day. We also bring a discussion about the legal, social, and medical implications of today, this 420 day.
Our headlines will cover news from UBC campus, local news from Metro Vancouver, provincial and federal news from across Canada, as well as news from around the world. All this plus your weekend weather forecast right here on News 101, your source for independent news, and now for a background on 420, courtesy of Wikipedia.
So, the earliest use of the term began among a group of teenagers in San Rafael, California in 1971, calling themselves the Waldos because, quote, their chosen hangout spot was a wall outside the school, end quote. The group first used the term in connection to a fall 1971 plan to search for an abandoned cannabis crop that they had learned about. The Waldos designated the Louis Pasteur statue on the grounds of their high school as their meeting place, and 4:20 p.m. was their meeting time. The Waldos referred to this plan with the phrase 4:20 Louis. Multiple failed attempts to find the crop eventually shortened their phrase to simply 4:20, which ultimately evolved into a code word that the teens used to mean smoking pot in general. High Times editor Steve Hager wrote, "Are you stoned smart or stoned stupid?" in which he called for 4:20 p.m. to be the socially acceptable hour of the day to consume cannabis. He attributes the early spread of the phrase to Grateful Dead followers who were also linked to the city of San Rafael. April 20th has evolved into a counterculture holiday in North America where people gather to celebrate and consume cannabis. Some events have a political nature to them, advocating for the decriminalization of non-medical cannabis in the United States as well as Canada. And now for a few 420 fun facts from Iqbal, because Iqbal loves his fun facts, and we will be continuing them throughout the show.
Today marks the 2-year anniversary of the Deepwater Horizon disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, which resulted in a catastrophic oil spill. Also, in 1910 on 4:20, the governor of Caracas declared independence from Spain.
I'm glad I know that now. And here's one more fun fact. As if the massive crowds downtown aren't enough, another interesting addition to this year's 4:20 is that it also happens to be a professional development day in high schools across BC. And as many of you know, a professional development day means that there was no school for any BC students. What a great combination. Well done, BC School Board. To discourage students from heading to the 4:20 event, the Vancouver School Board is co-hosting a free concert all afternoon in East Vancouver's Rio Theatre. But judging by the numbers of young people downtown today, we're guessing not exactly every high school student went.
Now we go to an interview with Michelle Vaughn from the BC Civil Liberties Association, who will be telling us about the legal and social issues regarding marijuana and the decriminalization versus legalization debate.
Okay. Okay, so great. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, perfect. So first of all, can you just give us a bit of an outline on what the BCCLA's position is on marijuana?
we're one of the oldest organizations on record to be calling for the repeal of the criminal laws against marijuana. And so we go back on this to the early 60s. Since then, many Canadians have joined us in that opinion, though the war on drugs is misguided in the extreme, and certainly no more so than on the topic of marijuana. That's been our longstanding position.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of misguided, could you elaborate a bit on that? I mean, what sort of differences would you like to see?
Well, there's various models that could be proposed, and this sort of gets us a little bit into some of the debates that have been occurring recently with the new leader of the federal NDP clarifying their position on decriminalization or legalization. What's the difference? The essential difference is, are we going to regulate this at all, like we regulate alcohol?
Mm-hmm.
We have no objection to regulation. There are substances that perhaps small children should be kept away from. There are reasons why you might want to make sure that different things have appropriate warnings, and due diligence is followed in various guises for potential countervailing harms, or just having consumers or some cases patients adequately informed about the products. So we're not adverse to regulation.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be, in terms of any discussion of marijuana that's happening in the world, that tends to be the discussion that's really the one on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Should we regulate this and tax this just like alcohol?
Mm-hmm.
And get these societal benefits of that monetary gain through taxes, as well as mitigating the harms that we have been perpetrating under the war on drugs by criminalizing users of these substances, and protecting the public in ways that are appropriate and adequate. So that's the program that's really on the table. We're not hearing much about the notion of, well, it should just be, it should be out there like pop.
Yeah, definitely.
I know that there are people who have that opinion, but in terms of policy proposals that are really in the realm of discussion, insofar as there are concrete proposals being made, for the most part, they are proposals, regulatory proposals.
I know that those proposals, in terms of regulate it so that it can be taxed and that we can actually use that money and see that benefit and regulate the use of it, those are definitely the strong ones. What kind of action do you expect to see federally from this, and what action has been seen in the past?
Well, nothing hopeful, despite the recent rhetoric where, many people were essentially reading the tea leaves when Stephen Harper made the concession that the war on drugs is not working. That was a statement that was made recently. And I suppose we wouldn't want to kind of minimize that as a potential signal or something that could be pointed to on the record. Simply put, we have no indications that the federal government is currently looking at anything that looks like a liberalization of drug laws. And I point in particular to the continued quite egregious position on medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there's a winner for anybody on the issue of, I'm not sure about cannabis generally, but medical cannabis, where, there is a bona fide therapeutic use, this should be a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Canada was really the first to get on board in enshrining a program of medical cannabis, and as if to make up for that progressive stance, they've managed to get the program wrong ever since.
Yeah.
It really is deeply shocking. This program does not provide genuine access to people in need. It does not, for a myriad of reasons, including the fact that it is just incredibly difficult To get a doctor to do the requisite paperwork, mm-hmm. it's incredibly difficult to jump through all the bureaucratic hurdles. And then finally, when you do all of that, if you can do all of that, it is incredibly difficult to access a source of medical marijuana.
Yeah.
So the tension around the criminalization, not merely of marijuana users, which we say is horrible, but of very sick people who need medicine,
mm-hmm.
That to us is, you know, as that is an indication of where the Canadian government is at in terms of its positions around marijuana, not very hopeful.
Yeah.
And really should be, you know, we're off to court again for, don't even ask how many times we've been to court, not us in mm-hmm. particular, although we are often an intervener in these cases, to try to fix all of the terrible holes in the medical marijuana access regulations. We've been at this for over a decade, and it's still not fixed. It's still mm-hmm. not real. It's still not genuine. So, you look at that track record and you say, wow, we're not in a very hopeful place.
Yeah.
Although, as I say, don't want to take away from the, you know, perhaps historic concession that was made about the war on drugs recently.
Yeah, definitely. I guess just moving back to talking about medical marijuana, you mentioned that you guys have been to court and like you're working very hard on trying to push some of these specific concessions through. I mean, what are some specific areas that you'd want to see changed? You did mention like how access is difficult and there's a lot of bureaucratic loopholes. So where is it that you guys are coming in to try and change this?
Well, there's a court case in Ontario called Murnau that is going to look at, basically struck down the medical marijuana access regulations because of the issue of the huge evidence base that was presented in the case showing that people could not get doctors to sign the requisite forms.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they didn't have the conditions that qualify, but that they couldn't get doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we've challenged is this notion of doctor as gatekeeper. You know, this system has not been working.
Mm-hmm.
Has not been working for years now. Medical associations actively canvass their members not to sign those forms. There's a huge tension here between, you know, the doctors as the only legitimate keys
mm-hmm.
to the entire program who are actively told that they must not sign these forms. Well, how is that system going to work? Not very well, unsurprisingly.
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of systems challenges that really have to be remedied if people in need are going to be able to get their medications. But on a lighter note, and I say only lighter because it's just even a deeper subset
mm-hmm.
of absurdity. I mean, we've really fallen down into Kafka land when we talk about the recent Victoria case that was just won, a charter challenge, that was won on the question of whether or not the medical marijuana access regulations could be restricted to dried cannabis.
Okay.
Now, that's what the regulations say. You're not mm-hmm. supposed to be able to somehow bake this into a consumable item or strain it into
right.
a tea. Or you can't drink it, you can't eat it, you can only what? Smoke it.
Right.
Okay? So this is Health Canada
mm-hmm.
telling sick people, including cancer patients, that if they require this medication, they need to smoke it. Now, I mean, we're in Alice in Wonderland here in terms of the logic, right? this is madness.
Yeah.
It is absolute madness. But we are, as I say, we're a decade plus into these regulations. And we have to go to court to get that struck down as unconstitutional.
Yeah.
It's, we really could do this right. There are other jurisdictions in the world that have used different models. There are things that we, if we put our mind to it, we have a lot of expertise in Canada with people who've been working on medical cannabis issues, have been really thinking about how to regulate these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kinds of things that are basic that you just consider as fundamental patient rights, right? I mean, you can imagine, as I say, dried cannabis is what's been prescribed in the regulations.
Mm-hmm.
So there you are. You're in your 80s. You've had no truck with marijuana your whole life. Mm-hmm. You manage to get through all the bureaucratic hurdles, and who exactly, your GP, is going to show you how to roll a joint? Not likely.
Yeah.
So we have this mm-hmm. situation where compassion clubs have really stepped up to the plate to provide community-based resources for people who use medical cannabis. And again, they're in a very gray zone, technically, not legal, and yet providing the needed services that the government is not providing.
Definitely.
And so these are the sorts of things that we want to get at. But, you know, better than going through the courts every time and, you know, thank goodness for the charter that gives us some tools to have this assessed through the courts. Really, this is a long and arduous process. Infinitely better would be for the federal government and Health Canada to just step up to the plate and say, why don't we just put this together like we really meant it to do what mm-hmm. it's supposed to do?
I guess moving beyond that, in terms of recreational use, obviously one of the big arguments against decriminalization is just that it gives sort of the public another, like, I guess the basic safety of it, and allowing public unrestricted access to what's, like, essentially another drug. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's very problematic, of course, when you say, well, you know, there's a safety issue on one side, and then there's this, this is a reason why we need to make sure that we're not loosening the reins on this unduly. There's a lot of contested evidence mm-hmm. around a lot of issues relating to marijuana. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the track record of marijuana mm-hmm. against something that is regulated, like, let's say, you know what I'm going to say here now, alcohol.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
You really have to address the massive double standard that is obviously at play here.
Yeah.
The civil liberties perspective is that the autonomy of the citizen is extremely important. And while we might want to protect people by informing them of things that might not be good for them, hey, that banana split might not be good for you,
mm-hmm.
We expect adults with capacity to be able to make these choices about how they want to conduct themselves in terms of their own personal safety themselves. There are some cases where we have a broader societal interest in saying, you know, hey, no, seatbelts, we're going to make it the law.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, these kinds of personal decisions about, you know, recreational substances of this kind, if we're going to take alcohol as some kind of analogous measure, although, as I say, it's not really that analogous. Mm-hmm. The harms of alcohol infinitely exceed the harms of recreational marijuana use.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have to say, you know, there comes a point, and it's a very important thing that we acknowledge, where citizens make these kinds of personal decisions for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if the government sees fit to require that some sort of regulation, some sort of warning, some sort of, you know, information be provided along these lines, then that would be fine and could well be appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of the state making these choices for you, you know, you can see that this is problematic from a civil liberties perspective.
Definitely. Just one last question. For all our friends who are downtown today, is there anything that they should be aware about in terms of their rights and so on?
Well, today is kind of a special day.
Mm-hmm.
The police have said around 4:20 for some time that they are making no attempts or priority of making any arrests for possession.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a kind of a concession to this this event and this political rally and various things. However, they have said that they will be very keenly looking for people who might be under the influence of cannabis who are heading towards their cars.
Right, okay.
So, let me put it this way. If you were coming to the rally, and good on you if you were, practice some common sense
mm-hmm.
In terms of what is happening at the rally, and keep in mind that that driving under the influence of any substance mm-hmm. is not on
Definitely. Well, thank you so much. It was great talking to you and to hear your insights.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care.
Great, bye-bye.
Bye. So that was Michelle Vaughn from the BC Civil Liberties Association talking to us about the different issues that we face in terms of decriminalization for marijuana as well as individual rights. So once again, thank you to the BC Civil Liberties Association for that.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Iqbal Ahmed. And before we continue, I'd like to make a slight contraction of our previous statement.
Retraction.
That I was informed by a listener that the date that the Governor Caracas declared independence from Spain was not April 20th, but was in fact April 19th. Thank you, Joel Rubio, for that information. But to replace that fun fact, I have an even funner fact for all you Trekkies out there.
Oh, joy.
Today marks the birthday of American actor George Takei, who can be most remembered as being the actor who played Hikaru Sulu in the original Star Trek series. Thank you. And while you guys are waiting, I will go to another fun fact, that today also marks the anniversary of Apollo 16, commanded by John Young, landing on the moon. This was NASA's 10th lunar mission.
Well, thank you, Iqbal. We all care so much. Thanks to BCCLA for that interview. We will be going to an interview to the wife of imprisoned marijuana advocate Mark Emery, Jody Emery, for her thoughts on 420.
As you know, ever since Vancouver's 420 celebration started in 1995 at Victory Square, the number of people who show up to this annual event has grown from the hundreds to the thousands. So does this feel like a boost to your own goals in terms of spreading awareness on cannabis prohibition and decriminalization?
Yeah, prohibition isn't working because people still get access, and we can see many people continue to get access, and it's widely available. So prohibition hasn't gotten rid of it. And it's always good to show the numbers of people who come out to show that they are harmless people who shouldn't be put in prison or facing arrest. And so that's a big goal, too, to show that we do have the numbers. Yeah. But yes, it's always great when our side gains more momentum and more allies and more supporters.
And a lot of times, sometimes people misunderstand the link between drug prohibition and gang violence. So could you tell our listeners more about this connection and why you think bringing in regulations will help move communities away from that violence?
Well, it happened with alcohol prohibition. When they made alcohol illegal, people dealt with it in the illegal market, and that meant criminals, and that created Al Capone and gangs. And we saw that that didn't get rid of alcohol. It didn't get rid of any problems with drinking. It just created a criminal control of that industry. And we're seeing the exact same thing with marijuana and other illegal drugs, is that they're still available, but those who choose to use them get punished by the law. And meanwhile, the people who supply them are facing prison time and able to control the market if they're in organized crime in any way. So it's a failed policy. It's obvious from all the historical examples.
Right. And we've also known for a while that local communities, especially in BC, have been quite vocal about their opinion on legalization. What's your opinion on how the political spectrum has changed in terms of how comfortable politicians are on talking about cannabis and hemp, and not just on the liberal side, but also on the conservative side?
Well, ending prohibition is a nonpartisan issue. It's something that people from all parties can support because it doesn't have to do with a political ideology. It has to do with just individual liberty, getting rid of harm being caused to those who are harmless, and getting rid of criminal control of something that's very popular and widespread.
I understand that it might not be a partisan issue, but there are conservative members who strongly side with the law being enforced by drug enforcers and police departments. So do you think those specific politicians are now more comfortable in talking about the issues surrounding cannabis and hemp?
Well, with Stephen Harper's government, I doubt anyone sitting as a member of parliament is going to speak out, because he would eliminate their position immediately and they'd be ostracized and outcast. The Harper government is set dead against any reform or legalization. They just want more drug war, more prisons, more police spending, more wasting billions of taxpayers' dollars while enriching gangsters and giving them more control. We saw from Mexico, if you look even south, you can see that the full military can't even stop gangsters' power and money and violence,
right,
and results in them becoming even more powerful with many dead people as the unfortunate consequence of that.
Absolutely. Do you think that police divisions like the Vancouver Police Department or the RCMP are warming up to this change, or are they choosing not to respond to the increase in grassroots political activism?
The police in Vancouver have typically been in favor. They don't really comment on it. They just follow their orders, basically. I mean, they are mostly, a lot of them are prohibitionists, but a lot of them aren't. They just can't speak out against it.
Absolutely. They are simply a byproduct of the law that is in place, right?
Yeah.
And speaking of somebody who's part of the law, Stop the Violence BC had a press conference on the 18th, and you were present on the panel along with its founder and UBC professor Dr. Evan Wood and Jeff Plant, and as well as former U.S. Attorney and Chief Prosecutor John McKay. So could you give us some background on how and why Mr. McKay was present on that panel?
He is a district attorney in Washington, and he prosecuted many marijuana cases, especially cross-border cases, and he was the prosecutor of my husband, Mark Emery,
right,
for his seed-selling business. And he appeared in 60 Minutes and in the media in the Prince of Pot documentary by CBC supporting that. But I believe he had a change of heart once he was fired by George Bush, along with other district attorneys. He has a professor, but he has started speaking out against it. I met him first a year ago last May when I was invited to testify at the state legislature in favor of legalization, and he was there testifying in favor as well. So I took the opportunity to thank him for bringing his experience and respectable status to this issue, because it's always important to thank allies when they join our side, no matter where they're coming from.
Absolutely. A lot of them are simply doing their job in terms of enforcing the law, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Jody, for talking to us. I'm sure this must be an extremely busy and tough time for you. And hopefully, will we see you talk at the 420 celebrations at the Vancouver Art Gallery on April 20th?
Yeah, of course I'll see you there.
Great. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you to Jody for that interview. We're going to take a quick break, but stay here for some more 420 talks on news at CITR radio station 101.9 FM.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Welcome back to news. And now we have CJ, our wonderful news correspondent, who is there live, Vancouver. CJ, tell us what it's like.
I'm standing here on the corner of Robson and Howe, and spirits are high. Spirits are really high right here.
Spirits are high.
Okay, spirits are high. I think not only spirits are high.
There are a lot of people on the road between Robson and Howe and Georgia and Howe.
Mm-hmm. How is the, in your opinion, how is the police presence there right now?
Hello?
Hi, how is the police presence there?
The police are, they have officers stationed like every 100 meters or so, and they're just standing there observing the crowd, making sure that, you know, things are going peacefully.
Are there a lot of, would you say high school young students?
Yeah, I did actually see some young high school kids there. And I guess Yeah, I saw them leave really quickly when some of the cops were approaching them.
Yeah, because, well, there's a, as we mentioned earlier on news, there's a professional day today happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we're expecting that to be a big influx. What are some of the main themes this year, you would say?
What do you mean?
With the legalization protests happening at the art gallery, along with this 420 celebration, what are the kind of the themes that many of the speakers are touching upon?
Iqbal, I'm sorry, I can't hear you, man. Your mic must be low.
Sorry, Iqbal was asking, with the speakers at the 420 event, have there been any reoccurring themes that people have been talking about, given, you know, this year and the Liberal Party making...
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. There, a lot of speakers have been talking about the fact that this year they've had a lot more political support, especially from the NDP and from the Green Party. And a couple of them, of course, have been talking about the increase in prison populations as well, especially when people get convicted of minor marijuana possession.
What would you say, if you had to generalize the type of people there, are these, your standard hippies, or are there a lot of students? Are there maybe some older people? Like, what would you say is the age cohort, and what would you say is, if you could generalize the people, how would it be?
Well, to talk of the age, I've actually seen a mother with a baby in a pram going through the crowd, and the oldest man I saw, he was like 75, 80. So there's a wide range of people here. And to describe them, I guess, I've seen everybody here. It's quite an experience. All kinds of people, all kinds of ethnicities, nationalities, you know, things like that. So.
Hi, CJ, can you hear me?
Hello?
CJ, I was just wondering, how large is the crowd there? Is it pretty packed? Was it a pretty big turnout this year?
I believe so. I mean, from the police report that I heard, they were expecting 15,000 people, and it does seem like that because a lot of people started walking on Georgia Street as well.
Mm-hmm.
And is it only the area around the art gallery, or is it spreading to other places downtown?
No, it's only the area and the streets around the art gallery.
What seems to be the Vancouver police, what seems to be their tactic in terms of keeping it to that area?
Sorry? Yeah, they have decided to keep it to that area. Although the people here were not supposed to move to Georgia Street, but they did. And so the police informed the event coordinators that if the people didn't get off the street, they would have to shut the whole event down. So people started moving back towards the art gallery.
Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, with the very large gathering happening, what have been some highlights in your mind of maybe the speakers or kind of the general atmosphere? What's sticking out in your mind?
In my mind, personal opinion, I've never seen a crowd like this in Vancouver before except during the Stanley Cup. So it's really great to see people of all ages and, you know, different walks of life who come to an event like this. But the point is, it's really good to hear speakers like them talk about important issues that current society is going through. So,
that would probably be the highlight this year, you would say.
Sorry?
That would probably be the highlight this year, you'd say? The fact
for,
that...
Yeah, for a movement like this, probably, yeah.
Awesome. Well, CJ, we envy you that you are in these crowds of fun, high-spirited people. And we thank you for your interview.
Sure. Have a good show.
Awesome to hear from you. Bye, CJ.
Bye.
So that was our very own CJ, and he was at the big celebration at the Vancouver Art Gallery live. That was us live talking to him.
So we are going to take a quick break, but stay with us here on CITR News 101.9 FM.
Do you need someone to talk to? If you are seeking a listener who is non-judgmental, confidential, and familiar with resources, then a Speakeasy volunteer might be able to help you. AMS Speakeasy is a peer support service located in the North Concourse of the Sub. If you would like to speak to someone, come to the desk and tell a volunteer, or ring the doorbell located behind the desk.
As interesting as listening to this PSA is, there's nothing quite like watching it. Watching what, you ask? The annual showcase of films that accompany it as part of the POV, or Persistence of Vision, Film Festival. This showcase of short films written, directed, shot, edited, and produced by students in the film production program at UBC happens only once a year. On April 27th and 28th, join the POV Festival at the Empire Granville 7 Cinemas in the heart of downtown Vancouver as these magnificent films are debuted. For tickets and information, visit povfilmfestival.com.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting to you live from the Student Union Building at the University of British Columbia and on the internet at CITR.ca. And you're listening to our special 420 episode of News 101. And now we go to the RCMP for tips on staying safe on this 420.
Celebrations at the Vancouver Art Gallery are the world's largest annual gathering of cannabis users and supporters. The event not only includes people from all over Vancouver and maybe all over BC, but it includes several speeches from well-known local politicians who support legalization of cannabis. It also includes performance by local artists and other acts on the two stages that are being set up. It is extremely crowded, with almost 15,000 people in and around the art gallery vicinity. With this in mind, News 101 thought it would be a good idea to get in touch with our local Vancouver Police Department to see what their plans and precautions are for the event. We got in touch with their media spokesperson, Constable Lindsay Hooten, and here is what he had to say. How many people do you expect will be at the event based on the increasing numbers from previous years?
Well, last year the weather was quite good and we saw anywhere around 3,500 to 4,000 people by our estimates. So we anticipate that there should be at least that many people today.
Does the police have plans for rerouting traffic? Have streets been blocked?
Well, the City of Vancouver did grant organizers a permit this year to block Howe Street. So that's typically been the area of concern for us in terms of traffic control. And with that being blocked, that'll alleviate any potential conflict or contact between vehicles and pedestrians on Howe Street.
Absolutely. And obviously, you expect the event to go pretty peacefully, but could you comment on what sort of specific behavior officers will be keeping an eye out for?
Well, we police about 200 demonstrations, protests, acts of civil disobedience every year, and this is one of those events. And as you mentioned, we have no concerns as long as these events are peaceful. The unique part about this event is that we certainly know people will be in possession of illegal drugs. And as we've mentioned many times, it's not our first priority to intervene in this event. Our focus as part of our drug strategy is on those who traffic in controlled substances,
right,
and not those in possession of minor amounts of marijuana. And we always look at things like proportionality with respect to our actions, and that being the risk and impact that our actions need to be proportional to the priority and severity of the situation in need of intervention. And like you mentioned, in the past, there have been no problems with this event, and we're not anticipating any this year. We've had no indication that this year's event is going to be any different than past year's event. Our primary role at events like this is public safety, and we would typically only intervene if there was a public safety or disorder situation or some type of violent event that arises.
Right. And of course you're expecting people of all ages, but will officers keep an eye out for people younger than 19 or 18? I mean, there have been concerns about this, especially since school students have been given a holiday because of the professional development day that their teachers are attending.
Yeah, officers are mindful that there's a Pro D Day in a lot of districts with a lot of schools, and they will be keeping an eye out for youth who are attending. And not only that, in talking with organizers in past years, they also keep an eye out for youth as well. And they certainly don't want to tarnish the image that this event has and dissuade it from being acceptable to a large part of the population. If our officers do find themselves having that conversation with youth who are making their way down there, you know, certainly there will be an education piece that goes on with respect to the use of marijuana, and as people would expect, part of that conversation may include contacting people's parents.
Great. Well, thank you, Officer Lindsay Hooten, for talking to us, and hopefully it'll be a successful event.
You're very welcome. Have a good day.
Once again, that was Constable Lindsay Hooten from the Vancouver Police Department talking to us about their plans and precautions for the 420 event at the Vancouver Art Gallery. Hopefully by the time you hear this, the event is going peacefully and the crowd is having a great time, basking in the warm Vancouver sun. Our team will shortly be reporting live from outside the Art Gallery to give you a first-hand report on the high spirits of the crowd.
Thank you to CJ and the Vancouver Police for that interview. We already actually did our live reporting. Anyway, we are going to take a break, but before that, here's Iqbal again with another fun fact that will hopefully be correct this time.
The blame only resides with Wikipedia. And another fun fact, April 20th, Ridgevan is a 12-day festival that begins today at sunset, which marks a very important festival in the Baha'i faith, commemorating the commencement of Baha'u'llah his prophethood. It begins at sunset on April 20th. It continues until sunset May 2nd. And that's your fun fact.
I'm so happy I know that.
I'm making
you
all more
so
worldly
much.
One fact at a time.
Now if I only knew what Baha'i faith meant.
It's a religion. But now we
go
to a PSA break, and you'll see CITR 101.9 FM.
The alphabet has only 26 letters. With these 26 magic symbols, however, millions of words are written every day.
April and Discorder is here. Daffodils are blooming, cherry blossoms blossoming, and Discorder smells spring fresh off the presses. Check inside for monthly faves, The Overeducated Grumbler, on the topic of Dan Levy, getting textually active with rock stars, and news on the venues you know and love. Read up on the lovelies of Ruffled Feathers, Indigo Kids, and Dirty Spells, and figure out where to pick up hard copies of their stuff at your favorite local record store on Record Store Day. Reviews, calendars, charts, interviews, art projects, photos, write-ups, and teardowns, all that and more in your free April issue of Discorder. Pick up your beautiful and free copy of Discorder at any Friends of CITR business, or if you've gone paperless, don't forget to check out Discorder at discorder.ca. Discorder, that magazine from CITR, supporting local music for over 25 years. How do you go from this
not being felt apart
to this? Your parents' Shakespeare? This ain't. Welcome to The Bombity of Errors, an adaptation of MC Willie Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors. Elizabethan times get pumped up with a little hip-hop flavor as actors sing, rap, and rhyme with a live DJ on stage. Bombity of Errors runs from April 4th through the 22nd at Studio 16 in Vancouver. For tickets and more information, just go to brownpapertickets.com.
Welcome back to CITR News 101. And now we have Phil with our weekend weather forecast. Hi, Phil.
Hey, and thank you very much. Good evening, listeners. Man, what a beautiful afternoon we had today. Warm sunshine with little cloud to obstruct our view of the blue, blue sky. It's just wonderful. Thankfully, the high-pressure ridge that's giving us this great weather appears like it's going to hang around for a bit. So, yeah. I am looking forward to tomorrow and possibly Sunday morning, too, to have weather just as equally as delightful. Now, here's your three-day weekend weather forecast for UBC. Tonight, scattered clouds, low of 8. Saturday, sunny with a few clouds, high of 12, low of 6. Sunday, partially cloudy in the morning and overcast and 60% of shower in the evening. High of 13, low of 9. So that's your weekend weather forecast for UBC, brought to you by the UBC Storm Club. Currently, it is around 11 degrees on UBC campus. Off campus, reporting for News 101, I'm Phil Chang.
Thank you, Phil. I'm excited for this weekend, and I really hope that it is just as nice as the weather was today.
And next on this special 420 episode of CITR News 101, we go to CITR correspondent Martin Lemlin, who conducted an interview with Dana Larson, who is a Canadian author, politician, and cannabis legislation activist. Larson was a founding member of both the Marijuana Party of Canada and the BC Marijuana Party. Take it away, Martin.
And public opinion is on our side more than ever before. But at the same time, the laws are stricter now than ever before. The Conservatives have just made them even more strict. Mm. And more of our people are going to be in prison and are in prison now than ever before. So I think we're building up to something that's got to give. And it's going to give on our side. And we're going to win this battle ultimately. But I think it's going to require a change in the federal government. And I think that we need to make changes at the provincial level. And I'm actually starting a campaign to get British Columbia to decriminalize possession of marijuana, because often the provinces will just say, oh, it's the federal government, we can't do anything about it. But at the same time, provinces regularly pass laws about property forfeiture, about restricting civil liberties when it comes to the war on drugs. So they'll pass laws to support it, but then when it comes to challenging it, they pass the buck. And actually, any province could decriminalize possession of marijuana and could make a lot of big steps forward. We had several provinces refusing to prosecute gun registry crimes and saying, we just don't think the gun registry is a good idea, we're just not going to enforce it. Whatever, forget it. Yeah. If they could do that for guns, they could do that for marijuana culture if they wanted to, too. And so I think we need to make change to the provincial. And also we see that a city can have a big influence. The municipalities have a huge influence. What we're doing here in Vancouver, if we tried this in Surrey, we'd have a much different reception. If we went to Abbotsford, it'd be very different. And also the zones of all the dispensaries that exist in Vancouver. We've been raided in Burnaby and North Vancouver. In other municipalities, we've had problems. But in Vancouver, we've got tolerance. So what your city does and what the municipal government is very important. And the provincial government is very important. And we can make a lot of change, and it's going to happen.
Is that what you think the difference is here? Because I've been to the one in Toronto, and it was nothing. It was like a gathering, you know. And here it's a certified celebration. Do you think it is just a general tolerance in the city?
Yeah, well, Toronto has normally focused on the Global Marijuana March and the Freedom Festival, and that's actually in previous years has been Canada's largest marijuana event. And our 420 is the second largest, although our one is unique with the open farmers market aspect. That doesn't happen anywhere else. But actually, this year in Toronto, it's a good example of why the municipal government's important, because for the first year in Toronto, they're not getting a license. The Freedom Festival part is not happening. They normally have a stage and tons of booths, and it's like this, but in a much larger area, and there's tens of thousands that come, and they have a big parade and the marijuana march. And this year, they're only doing the march. The city has refused them a permit, and it's because Rob Ford, the mayor, doesn't like marijuana. They've got a hostile city council, and they're trying to shut them down. So it shows, and it's always been a peaceful, successful event with no problems there, and so it really shows how important a municipal government is and how important the mayor and council it is to get involved locally and make a difference, because there's no reason what we're doing in Vancouver here couldn't happen in other cities. There's no reason we shouldn't be able to open dispensaries and to open this up in other cities, but we need to have municipal governments that are on board. And I'm really grateful for Gregor Robertson and for Vision Vancouver and for the support and the tolerance they've shown the marijuana community.
Yeah. It's really just a matter of the people pulling up their socks and making a sincere effort to challenge the laws, even just starting with our communities, and then it'll build up, and eventually the federal government's got to give, right?
And it's about taking time, too. I mean, this is 18 years this has been happening here. It didn't start off like this, right? It took many years of risk and effort to get a bit of the openness happening and to push it to this level where now we're openly accepted, but that's what it takes. So it takes a bit of risk and a bit of pushing, but it's, I mean, I've never regretted getting involved in cannabis activism and working to end the drug war. It's been a very fulfilling life for me. I've got a chance to do lots of different kinds of activities, to meet lots of great people and to have an impact that really helps people in their day-to-day life, you know, through the dispensary, through the seed bank, making genetics and cannabis available to those who need it. You know, there's no doubt that cannabis marijuana, it's the world's most wonderful plant. There's no other plant that offers the wide range of medicinal, therapeutic, as well as industrial and the wide variety of uses a cannabis plant can be put for. Nothing else compares. It's the world's most wonderful plant, and I've been privileged and honored to be able to share it with other people, both through seeds and through the buds themselves. And I think that's what it's about. It's about making sure that this plant that has given so much to us and everyone here, I think all the people that are coming are here because they love cannabis and it's made their lives better and they believe in it. And I encourage those people to give back to this plant what it's given to them.
How are you giving back? To show up and give it support?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think we're gonna see a lot of change. You know, I think this is a celebratory fun event, but it's also a deeply political one as well. And just because we're having fun, you know, that doesn't mean that we're not addressing really serious issues. And we always, you know, Mark Emery's banner is on the stage. He's a close friend of mine, and he's not coming back to Canada until mid-2014 at the latest. And aside from him, and he's someone who's got friends and media and people that care about him or are able to see him, but there are millions of other cannabis prisoners out there who are forgotten, who don't have people coming to visit them, who don't get banners up on stages, who are there because they love marijuana, because they believe in this plant, because they were using it themselves or trying to make it available to others. And we always have a moment of silence. We always try to remember that there's a lot of people who can't be here today who would like to be here, and that our goal is to make sure that everybody who celebrates the cannabis culture can do so freely and openly, like this little zone of tolerance that we got today, and to spread this all around the world.
Do you have any idea about the numbers, like cannabis convictions in recent years?
They've been going up every year. It's around 50,000 people, I think, get charged every year for cannabis, and that's just mostly possession.
Provincially or federally?
Not federally, all across the country, but in British Columbia, actually leads all the provinces per capita in terms of marijuana possession charges and arrests. And people always think that BC's not like that, and it's the zone of tolerance, but it's actually quite a high rate, higher than any other province. And it's partly because marijuana is very popular here, so there's a lot of marijuana smoking, but certainly what we do here today is not always what it's like in this city. And if you only see this, you know, there's a lot of other areas in Vancouver, in BC, where things are a lot harsher, and you can't just wander around Vancouver smoking joints openly. You're going to get arrested. You're going to get bothered. It's not going to be, it's not that open yet. So it is a problem, man. Those numbers get bigger every year. All of our other crime rates are dropping, but with marijuana, they can charge as many people as they want. It's about the police effort. It's not about the usage rate changing. I mean, they go after every murder that happens, or most of them anyways, but with marijuana smoking, it's just, well, how much time do we have? How many officers do we have? They could double or triple the number of busts just by putting more officers onto it and cracking down more. So it's just showing that the police really are wasting their time. Other crimes are going down. So they're wasting their time going after pot people, and that's not how it should be. And I don't think most taxpayers really want to see marijuana users, especially, being harassed and arrested and charged and having a criminal record. You know, you may not want your kids smoking pot, but you may also not want your kid's life to be ruined by a criminal record, which ultimately will do a lot more danger and harm to their life than having a few puffs off a joint ever would.
What's the lesser of two evils here? Your kid's going to smoke a joint, or he's going to go to prison or have a criminal record or something?
Yeah, I mean, I don't consider marijuana smoking an evil, but I mean, even for those who do can see it that way and who are, you know, worried about it, and certainly kids smoking marijuana is for the large part, you know, safer and better than a kid drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
And however you feel about marijuana, there's no doubt that marijuana is safer than alcohol, yeah. Right? I mean, you can debate the relative dangers of cannabis, and I consider it a pretty harmless substance, really beneficial, actually, if you look at how many of our medical patients use it, but there's no question that marijuana is safer than alcohol, and if you're going to choose one of those substances, marijuana, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's the better choice.
Thanks a lot. Final message?
Have a happy 420, and let's just make sure that this spirit of this fun we have today and this openness and this tolerance spreads so that every day can be 420 in our hearts and in our lives.
Amen.
Right on. Thank you very much. That was a pleasure.
Awesome.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM.
Thank you for that clip.
And now for our final fun fact of the night.
And we are really excited, and me and Claire just want to say that we really appreciate Iqbal's fun facts, and we know that you as listeners do too, because sometimes Iqbal gets discouraged. And you do your thing, Iqbal. I'm right behind you.
And now here's the most exciting fun fact of the night. Today on April 20th, 1961, marked the failure of the Bay of Pigs invasion by U.S.-backed Cuban exiles who attempted to overthrow the government of Fidel Castro.
Wow!
Knowledge.
What a great fun fact. Right. And you know what? That fun fact was the only thing that could have ended this news show tonight with such a great boom. Thank you for that.
And that's our program for April 20th, 2012. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments or get involved or give us an important news tip, contact us through our email at news@citr.ca. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows and interviews on our website, citr.ca/news. For more independent news, join us on Monday and Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. And I'm Iqbal Ahmed.
And I'm Nina Krigia. Today's show was produced by the one and only Claire Eagle. And from the entire news team at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Stranded right here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Band. I pulled into Nazareth just feeling about half-assed dead. Just need to find a place where I can lay my head. Mister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed? He just grinned and shook my hand. No was all he said. Take a load off Fanny. Take a load to freeze. Take a load off Fanny. And you put the load right on me.
My bags and went looking for a place to hide. When I saw old Carmen and the devil walking side by side, I said, hey Carmen, come on, let's go downtown. She said, I gotta go, but my friend can stick around. Mm-hmm.
Take a load off Fanny. Take a load for free.
Say, it's just old Luke, and Luke is waiting on judgment day. Hey Luke, my friend, what about a young Anna Lee? He said, do me a favor, son, or won't you stay and keep an Anna Lee company? Yeah.
Take a load off Fanny, take a load for free, take a load off.
This is Pure Dracula from MacLoo, and you are tuned in to CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. CITR.ca.